We're going to talk NBA. We continue on. Alan Horton is the play-by-play voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Alan, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Jason, good to talk to you guys. How are you?
Hey, excellent. We'll get to some Timberwolves stuff. Then I want to get your thoughts on the NBA. Of course, you watch all the teams. You have some great insight on it. Andrew Wiggins and Towns in Minnesota. When you look at them, you would think, hey, here's a really good foundation to build around. Is it just because they're in the ultra-competitive West, or what's been lacking? How come Minnesota hasn't been more competitive with two really good young players?
Yeah, I mean, they've played together now for four straight years, and the one year they got to the postseason, they had Jimmy Butler on the roster last year. So, there was a lot of hope from Timberwolves fans everywhere that, with Towns and Wiggins and even Zach LaVine before he was traded to Chicago for Jimmy Butler in that deal, that the Wolves were an up-and-coming team. And, they decided to jump in and get Jimmy Butler and sort of fast-forward the process a little bit. And they made the playoffs, won 47 games. Then you had the whole drama with Jimmy, and everybody knows how that turned out this season. But it has been a little bit disappointing that those guys have not been able to lead the team on their own to the postseason. And like I said, they're 4 years in. Towns' fourth year, Wiggins' fifth year. And both of them now are on max contracts. And if, one of the issues in the NBA for any team is that you've got money locked up in max deals to a couple of players and aren't getting max value out of those deals, you're going to be in trouble. And I think flat out that's what the issue is right now for Minnesota. I think Towns has shown that he has ascended nicely. I mean, his growth curve is a very sharp upward one. I think there's still a lot of promise for Carl. But for Andrew, it's 5 years in, and he's been very up and down and mostly down. It has not improved. His shooting numbers this year were pretty poor. And I think, that's one of the questions the team is undergoing a search right now for president of basketball operations. And I think that's one of the big issues is how you find a way for this team to succeed with your max money tied up in Towns and Wiggins.
Well, I love you. Kind of brought my next question about, who do you think would be the right person to orchestrate this push into more relevance for the Timberwolves as far as the president of basketball operations?
Yeah, I mean, they're interviewing four different candidates that we know of, and, I don't have any sort of insight on who might be the best. All I know is that, from watching this team over the last 12 years and specifically during the Wiggins and Towns era, is that you've got to come in and evaluate where this team is and do you have to adjust some roles? Do you have to make a trade? Do you have to, I think you've got a good enough sample size where you should know who Carl Anthony Towns is. You should know who Andrew Wiggins is. And this person that comes in has to be able to determine, can I win with those guys, either one of them or both? And if not, how are you going to go about moving on from that player? It's ludicrous to keep going down the road. I mean, it's the definition of insanity, right? Just to keep rolling it out there and expect things to change. Wiggins and Towns over their 4 years together have taken roughly around the same number of shots. I think Wiggins has gotten a couple of hundred more, but Towns has been a top five true shooting percentage player, and Wiggins has been bottom five during that 4 year stretch. I mean, in this day and age of maximizing every single possession and the analytics, I mean, this just screams inefficiency. And even though the Wolves offense has been 2 years ago it was top five, this past year it was outside the top 10, still not bad, but not good enough when your defense ranks 24th. So someone's got to come in and I think immediately recognize the situation and adjust accordingly and implement I'd love to see someone come in with a plan who's already taken a look at this roster, knows exactly what they want to do, and you move forward with that plan.
Alan Horton joins us. Now, you mentioned you know what you have in Wiggins. You see him all the time. What are his strengths? What are the areas that he needs to improve on?
Well, he's a high-volume scorer right now, and he has not shot the ball well from any area on the floor this past season, whether it was at the rim, whether it was on those floater shots, the mid-range game, which is almost his default setting. This NBA has turned into almost, an anti-mid-range game. Now, there are some exceptions. I mean, Golden State's a big mid-range shooting team. So is San Antonio. They've had success with it, but those teams also do a much better job on the defensive end. So they may not be maximizing their offensive possessions, but they can rely on a pretty good defense. Andrew seems to default into those mid-range pull-up jumpers, and he's been one of the worst shooters in the NBA in that area. It's just, that's a fact. And so how do you change his shot chart? How do you, you know, these are questions that someone, a front office and the coaching staff have to get to the bottom of. As anyone who's seen Andrew play, he can disappear at times on the floor. He's not a high energy guy. You're not going to see him fist pumping and jumping up and down. Very rarely do you see that. He's hit a couple of game winners in which he's done that, but he's a very even keeled guy. He's low maintenance, low key. And, you know, someone's got to come in and evaluate that and then find a way to maximize it. And if that means changing his role and limiting shots, does it mean coming off the bench? I'm not sure you can do that with a max player or if that's ever been done with a max player before, but you've got to find a way to maximize him, to motivate him. He's had huge numbers against, you know, teams like Toronto, teams like Cleveland. This year it was Oklahoma City. Teams that he gets up for, you know, Cleveland's the team that drafted him. Toronto's his hometown. But he has not been consistent in doing that on a night to night basis. And so that's part of the frustration with Andrew. And of course, you know, he's just had a ton of expectations on him since being the number one pick out of Kansas. And, you know, maybe those expectations that he's had that even before that, even coming out of high school, coming out of, you know, out of his prep school in West Virginia. It's and the expectations have always been high for him, and maybe they've been set too high.
Alan, you know, I understand what you're saying, but if we're being totally honest, it's not like Minnesota is playing in L.A. or playing in New York, or so he can hide a little bit there, you know. And I wonder, is he in the right location? Does he need to be somewhere where maybe the pressure is cranked up a little bit more, so he feels the heat more, or is he feeling it there in Minnesota enough?
That's a good point. Minnesota is definitely a, you know, I've been around the NBA long enough to know that it is a little bit more low key in Minnesota than it is in some of the bigger cities, or even, you know, not even bigger cities, but even a city like Portland, where they're the only game in town. There's incredible scrutiny on them. So there is pressure there. You know, I don't know what that would do to Andrew. I don't know how you would facilitate something like that happening. Those are kind of some big issue questions that the Wolves front office has to figure out.
Now, moving around in the West, Alan, you watch all those teams. Has any team's play surprised you in the first round of the Western Conference?
I guess I'd go with Denver. You know, the Denver-San Antonio series, you know, San Antonio looked so good for the first game and a half of that series. Then you saw Denver kind of wake up, and Jamal Murray had a big fourth quarter, and you thought, okay, maybe Denver's back here. But then they laid an egg, I thought, in game three, and then they came back in game four. So that's really been a roller coaster. And I'm fascinated to see the way that series ends up, because Denver's a team that finished up second in the West. Incredible, you know, after missing the playoffs by one game each the last 2 years, they put it all together this year. They had a monster regular season. They did struggle, I thought, down the stretch. We saw them a couple of times towards the end of the year, including the season finale, when they had to score the last, I think they finished the game on an 11-0 or 15-0 run to win the game by four, to really secure that number two seed. Their offense has really been inconsistent second half of the year, and they were the one team that you thought of all the West playoff teams that hasn't really proven it yet. And maybe they found their footing, but maybe not. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see as they go back to Denver for game five.
Talking with Alan Horton from Minnesota Timberwolves. He's a play-by-play man there. You know, looking back at one of the other sides, I'll go back to the Clippers and Golden State. And Golden State's a team that everyone thinks are going to roll. How much do you think that affects them with having Boogie Cousins out now?
I think that does affect them a little bit. You could argue that, you know, without him in the equation, he never really fit to begin with. But I just think when you're in the postseason, you know, Boogie's got a chance to – if and when he gets hot, he's got a stretch. He can carry that team for, you know, a stretch on the floor, or maybe a half, or even a game. I mean, that's what kind of talent he's got. And you might need that along the way somewhere, especially if, you know, Steph Curry had a rough shooting night the other night. Now, Golden State did beat the Clippers in that game four, I guess. But, you know, I think you do kind of miss somebody who's got the talent that DeMarcus Cousins has. I think in the long run, does it really affect their chances of winning the title? No, I don't think it does, because I think Golden State is still the class of the conference, the class of the league. If they, I think they're they control their own destiny. If they have some infighting, or if something, you know, if they were to get nicked up again with maybe one more of their guys, or they're just, you know, they can sometimes lack motivation. We saw it in game two when the Clippers came storming back. you know, they've been at it for so many years. It is a grind, and it takes a toll physically and mentally. So I think they're, you know, they control their own destiny. Now, with that being said, I think Houston has looked really good these first couple of games, three games against Utah. I thought they weren't quite deep enough. I thought maybe their best chance of upsetting Golden State came last year when Chris Paul went down with that hamstring injury. But I think they've looked really sharp and focused and determined. And if James Harden has to carry the load, he has shown that he can do that for the course of the season. So I think going into the postseason, I thought Golden State would dominate, and I think they controlled, like I said, their own destiny, just the way they play. But now I think Houston does give them a puncher's chance, because I think the way they're playing, boy, they just look crisp on both ends of the floor. And after struggling to start the year, you know, you almost get that out of the way early, and they've been playing great basketball ever since, what, November or December now.
Alan, maybe it's because Detroit and Orlando right now just aren't as good, but, you know, the Raptors had a little glitch in game one, but they've dominated games 2-4, and Detroit's lost three straight to the Bucks. Have you seen anything from Toronto or Milwaukee to say, oh, I like them more in the postseason?
You know what? It's funny. Those guys have, you know, other than, like you mentioned, Toronto getting knocked off in game one, I haven't watched much of that. Those series haven't intrigued me. What I want to see is those final four in the East. I want to see what we're going to see, Milwaukee and Boston. Milwaukee will likely finish it off tonight. And then I want to see Philadelphia and who am I missing? Boston, Toronto, Philly, and who's the other top four in the East?
Oh, Milwaukee and Boston, Philly and Toronto.
Yeah. Philly and Toronto. Okay, there we go. Yeah, I want to see those four slug it out. I think that's what we've been angling for all season. Those are the cream of the crop in the East, and I think we're going to get there. And then you know, let the games begin. I just think it's fascinating. You know, Milwaukee, Boston, the way Toronto can play, and if Kawhi Leonard is just. Well, I tell you what, I don't want to skip ahead to the offseason, but I'm fascinated to see what happens with Kawhi Leonard, because I think the longer things went on in the regular season and the deeper run they make in the postseason, I think the chances are greater and greater that maybe Kawhi Leonard stays in Toronto. I mean, nobody really knows what this guy wants. If he wasn't happy in San Antonio, I'm not sure we'll ever know what he wants. But I think the chances get greater and greater the deeper the Toronto makes that run. And after that hiccup in game one, boy, they've looked sharp, and they just come at you with so many different weapons and guys that they've developed. I mean, Norman Powell is an undrafted free agent. I mean, and he's playing significant minutes in the rotation. Those are the guys, you know, you want to look at good teams. It's easy to spend max money on big name players. I don't think that's hard to do. What's hard to do is develop a second round pick into your rotation to find an undrafted free agent. You're maximizing your value. You've got to work around the edges after you get your superstar players and dish out the big money. But can you find those gems, those diamonds in the rough, late first round picks, second-round picks, undrafted free agents? We mentioned Denver. Denver's done the same thing, whether it's Malik Beasley, Monte Morris, Torrey Craig, all those guys playing big roles. And Toronto's done an unbelievable job of that with Fred VanVleet and Norman Powell. And they've got a couple other guys that are late first-round or second-round picks. That's how you win in this league, I think. And I think the Timberwolves might have some of that with Josh Okogie, Kata Bates-Diop, and Cameron Reynolds. That means those might not be household names to a lot of fans out there. But late first round, second round, and undrafted free agent in the Wolves' case. And if you can hit on those, you don't need them to be all-stars. That's not likely going to happen. You'll take it, certainly, if you can. But you need to find guys like that, maximizing what little money you have to spend at free agency, and work around the edges to make yourself a really good team.
Quickly, who do you think the Timberwolves are looking at with the 10th pick?
Great question. I really have no idea. I watch exactly zero of college basketball even with the Final Four coming through Minneapolis. I guess I watched some of the Final Four, but you know, I just think if you're not a top, you know, in the top 3, 4, 5 somewhere in there, and I don't think the Wolves will be, since they somehow have never moved up in the history of the draft lottery. The Wolves have never moved up. When the draft lottery comes around May 14th. So we're already pessimistic to begin with, that the Wolves will either stay where they're slotted to at 10 or maybe even drop. But if they could jump up, well, then you've got some options. But I think once you're late, mid to late lottery, you've got to take best available player and try to – you've got to hit home runs. When you're a small market team, you can't afford to miss on players. You've got to find someone who can – come in and be an impact player, and again, be a part of that rotation. Because again, the rookie contract is one of the best values in the league, so you've got to be able to maximize those. Just like they did with Josh Okogie, who really struggled offensively, but this guy has already shown that he can be an upper tier defender, I think, in this league. And you've got to keep doing it year after year to give yourself as many chances as possible to finding those guys that can fit right in and jump into the rotation.
Do they need a shooter more than anything else?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've just gone crazy with over 12 years. You know, only twice in the Wolves' 30-year history have they outscored their opponents at the three-point line during the course of a season. So they've had a negative three-point differential in 28 out of 30 years. And we all know how important the three-point shot is. The Wolves have been bottom three in the last 5 years running. It's a lack of three-point shooting at the offensive end. It's a lack of defending the three-point line at the other end. And that combination will absolutely crush you in this league when you're facing the likes of Houston and Denver. I mean, just about everybody in the league is jacking up, 35, 40, 45 three-point attempts, and you're trying to make up, the opponents are knocking down 16 of them, and you're lucky to hit 10. That's too much. That's 18 points you're leaving at the three-point line that you've got to make up somewhere else. That's tough to do on a nightly basis. So, yes, shooting is enormous. They have to find not just one shooter. They got to find multiple shooters and, I think, build an offense around the three-point line. Just get modernized just like everybody else. It doesn't mean you have to lead the league in three-point shooting or attempts, but you've got to be closer to league average on that end, and you've got to be closer to league average in defending the three-point line at the other end.